All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for October 1st, 2018. Ms. Trivancy, would you read the roll call, please?
Mayor Dooley?
Here.
Councilmember Barker?
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Here.
Councilmember Smith?
Here.
Councilmember Michelson is excused.
Thank you. If you please rise and join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we don't have minutes to approve tonight due to the quick turnaround of tonight's meeting compared to the last. So next up is approval of the biweekly claims. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve the biweekly claims.
For a second. Ms. Barker?
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the biweekly claims. Questions from council? Ms. Holcomb.
Page 14701 for MMIA for $1,500 for Taylor deductible and one for Wilson deductible.
Those are both claims on our insurance. One was the incident with the Public Works trailer that came off the truck, and the other was the driveway damage claim up at the airport. Other questions from council? Public comment on the claims? Okay, hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilmember Smith?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Barker?
Aye.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is administrative reports. The finance officer had a family emergency this afternoon, and so she is not able to attend tonight. You just have a couple of notes from her. We've received our BARSA funds that were requested through resolution at a previous meeting in the amount of $12,772.94. And our first quarter state apportionment of approximately $50,000 has been received. Those should be reflected in your cash reports. We'll move on to police report. Ms. Berthout.
Chief Marvel is off today, so I'm going to fill in for him tonight. Quick monthly report. September 11th through the 14th, Chief Marvel attended his criminal interview and interrogation, along with the advanced interview and interrogation training in Missoula, where we had coffee with a cop at the end of the month, September 27th. Lower attendance than previous months, but as always, good conversation and stories with the community members. You will also see that I have attached an email that the chief sent over to me that he just wanted you guys to be able to look over in regards to deer mitigation at the airport, just something to kind of keep in mind, and he'll have time to discuss that with you guys later as well. It was, he met with Craig Thomas at the airport, discussed deer mitigation, what they can do next, discussed the safety concerns, and also just what they possibly could look at for the future, so maybe in a deer jump and stuff.
Any questions from council for the police clerk? Any public questions? Great, thanks, Janelle.
Okay.
Public Works, George.
So for this last month, we had three water leaks repaired and fixed on Main Street, Pine Street, and Circle. Also had our sewer mains jetted. We had 10,000 feet of sewer mains jetted for cleaning. I spent last week with leak detection. We did all of town. We found several leaks. I haven't got their report yet. We have another one on Main Street, Pine Street, 5th Street, and 6th Street as far as leaks go. That's basically all we replaced blower today. The last blower we got that was lasted a week and they started leaking oil. So they sent us one directly from the factory instead of they going from the factory to another place and then to another place and to us. And so we just did that today. There's been no cost. cost to us because of the oil leaks.
Any questions for George?
Yes, sir. Are any of these leaks in the new water line? Or can I miss?
All.
Okay.
And, we went over into the subdivision over here, all quiet.
Okay.
Over here, all quiet, all on the new main that was put in down Fifth Street and Church Street. Those were quiet.
Okay.
Yes, sir. When are you scheduled to do some paving?
We're not going to need to pave, we're just going to do some final work, and hopefully we're going to do that Wednesday. Spring to do that right well. And we'll see if we can clean it this fall. And then we'll pave around that so you guys can have that.
Okay. Thanks, George.
All right, there are no guests to recognize tonight, nor any correspondence, so we'll open it up for public comment. Public comment is an opportunity for you to comment on anything on tonight's agenda or under the jurisdiction of the town of Stevensville. If you're commenting on something on tonight's agenda, you may wait until that agenda item if you so choose. For public comment, please step to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and have at it. If there's any public comment. Okay. Oh, Mr. Mimak.
Thank you. So, Gene Mimak at 1025 Ironcap Drive, Stevensburg. So, I was attended the meeting last week, and was struck by the report of Councilmember Smith about surveillance cameras in the park. And a couple of things came to mind that I wanted to comment on, because at that meeting we weren't allowed to comment on the discussion of any concerns that we might have. So I thought I'd take this opportunity now. Appreciate you sort of bearing with me with this. First of all, is Kathy Cook here?
No.
I want to state that I have no objection to the concern that people feel when their property is vandalized. I share that concern because as a property owner in Stevensville for the last 14 years, I have experienced a number of times where my properties have been vandalized, broken windows, etc., to the tune of several thousand dollars during the time I've been here. I would say that I received advice from the police chief years ago about what I should do about broken windows, especially broken windows that had to do with a liquor store, and he suggested I put bars on the windows. And I said, well, Chief, I'm not ready to make that statement in Stevensville that we need bars on our windows to be safe. I think it sends a message to the public that I'm not comfortable giving, and I don't think it's true for Stevensville, quite frankly. So I've never done that. We fix the windows, we move on. Just last winter, a person took a beer bottle somewhere on the street and threw it through one of the main windows of Valley Drug. Cost a few $1,000 to fix. We fixed it, and we moved on. We didn't put security cameras on the outside of the building facing the sidewalk of the street. For the reason that I don't think it's an appropriate response. That's me as a business owner, individual choice. I think we want things to feel secure, but I don't think people really in Stevensville, and I think statewide, want to feel like they're being watched as a general message about how we feel about security in Stevensville. So I've also heard it come up in the discussions about when I was mayor that we never did anything with regards to the issues of surveillance when it was brought to our attention. I think the simple answer is that after looking at surveillance, talking with the chief, and talking to members of the council, it was pretty clear that I had, and others on the council shared that, I'm not saying it was unanimous and never came up at a public meeting, that going down the path of putting cameras in parks with regards to right to privacy issues, even in a public space, was not something that we thought we wanted to go down. We just didn't feel like the town was ready for that. And that was really necessary given the level of things that we were trying to prohibit. So we didn't do that, but we tried to improve lighting, we tried to improve patrols, we started locking the gate. I know Mayor Dewey, when he was a cadet in the thing, was in charge of locking the gate sometimes for us, and we tried to deal with it in a minimal fashion that we thought was reasonably proactive. Doesn't mean it stops all the violence and vandalism that happens, but we thought it was a more appropriate response to the level of vandalism that we were suffering. So, I wanted to bring to the council's attention and members of the public who are here some issues within the state with regards to surveillance. And I think an interesting point was the state in 2009 had a large discussion about whether or not we would permit red light cameras in any community. Bozeman and Darby and a couple other, like Helen or somebody, was also involved in this. And the answer was no. Now, part of that discussion, not the entire discussion, but part of that discussion involved public surveillance. And in Montana, did we want to have public surveillance or intersections? And the legislature passed a bill, and the governor signed it, banning red light cameras in Montana. The section of the Montana Constitution that protects a person's right to privacy is a section 10, and it's one sentence. The right to individual privacy is essential to the well-being of a free society and shall not be infringed without a showing of a compelling state interest. One sentence, judged by the Montana Supreme Court to be more controlling about the issues of right to privacy, in other words, granting more privacy in Montana than any other state in the country, and in excess of the constitutional requirements, I believe in the first and fourth provisions of the Constitution that deal with these issues. So Montana has already said, we want a higher standard of privacy of our citizens in Montana. In the Supreme Court case in the state of Montana in 1997, State of Montana versus Siegel, the Supreme Court went to the trouble of saying, listen, we're going to interpret this one sentence, and we're going to use what the framers of our Constitution meant. What did they intend? So in that constitutional convention, it was recorded about what they intended by making this one simple sentence. Today, with wiretaps, electronic and bugging devices, photo surveillance equipment, and computerized data banks, a person's privacy can be invaded without his knowledge, and the information so gained can be misused in many insidious ways. It isn't only a careless government that has this power to pry. Political organizations, private information gathering firms, and even an individual can now snoop more easily and more effectively than ever before. We certainly hope that such snooping is not as widespread as some people would have us believe, but the technology, easily available and becoming more refined all the time, prudent safeguards against the misuse of such technology are needed. Some may urge and argue that it is a legislative issue, not a constitutional issue. We think the right to privacy is like a number of other inalienable rights. A carefully worded constitutional article reaffirming the right is desirable. Therefore, they came up with it. We at the committee felt strongly that the people of Montana should be protected as much as possible against eavesdropping, electronic surveillance, and such activities. We found that the citizens of Montana were very suspicious of such activity. And they went on. After listening to testimony, after examining briefs that were submitted to us, after analyzing the situation, it is inconceivable to any of us that there would ever exist a situation in the state of Montana where electronic surveillance could be justified. And the thinking throughout the United States is electronic surveillance shall be justified only in matters involving national security. Surveillance shall be justified only in matters involving certain heinous federal crimes where the situation is such that the instances we must risk the right of privacy because there is a greater purpose to be served. But within the state of Montana, we cannot conceive of a situation where we would ever permit electronic surveillance. Patricia Kane, writing about the right to privacy under Montana's Constitution, said, in this simple, elegant sentence, the state of Montana created the strongest protection for privacy rights in any state in the country. The delegates at the convention expressed their support for strong privacy rights again and again. They believed privacy was so important that Montana should offer greater protection to individuals than the federal government provided, and indeed they thought that it was so important that it needed to be in the Constitution. She also says the framers of the Constitution intended to enlarge the scope of the right to privacy and include substantive rights, in addition to the right to be free from unjustified searches in one's own home. Furthermore, the very fact that the delegates propose a distinct privacy provision, separate from Section 11, which is search and seizure, of the delegation of rights in the Constitution, which covers search and seizure, indicates the intent to protect a concept of privacy greater than the geographical security in one's home. So while an individual's right to privacy in public spaces is not as great, this is my words, as applied to the home, the property rights, of course, have judged that the right goes with the person, not the place. There's an interesting case in the federal courts about a phone booth. They knew that a person was illegally gambling, taking wagerings over a phone, and he was using a particular phone booth. So they put a listening device on the outside of the phone booth. Lo and behold, the person goes in to use the phone booth, and they record him, but he does one thing. He closes the door of the phone booth. And when they put that case to trial, it was judged that his act of closing the door, he was telling people that he had an expectation of a right to privacy. There can be little nuances in the law, I'm not a lawyer, not pretending to be, that are interesting when we talk about privacy rights. There's all kinds of interesting little nuances. But that act alone, from the court standpoint, suggested that he had a right to privacy and an expectation of that right, and that he had a right to that to be respected, and through the recording out. The courts have also ruled, and again, these are court cases that are available to be researched. I did some research. I came up with these. And it also talked about when you have enough surveillance, and I base this on, I think, what Councilperson Smith was talking about, the number of cameras, which many as 10, the last meeting was described as, and that the park would be essentially covered in cameras on poles. So that you could surveil the park, the entire park, for varying reasons. There is a court case that talks about that if you can stitch together a person's movement from camera to camera to camera, that violates a person's expectation of right to privacy. Whereas one camera directed, limited in its scope for a specific reason, it can be easily justified and accepted. Multiple cameras that can track people's movements are not. We're also talking about putting cameras in another park. All of that video can be stitched together, record just a casual person's movements for whatever reason through the entire park in here, and if they happen to visit the next park, they can be picked up over there. I would suggest that that level of surveillance pushes the limits of the right to privacy in a public place. There are three tests that one uses. Whether a person challenging the state's action has an actual subjective expectation of privacy. Whether society is willing to recognize that that subjective expectation is objectively reasonable, and the nature of the state's intrusion. Why are you doing this? Right now, the only stated reason that I can come up with that we're deciding to putting this level of surveillance in parks is because we've had some random acts of vandalism. And we have reported by concerned citizens that there may be drug dealing going on in the park. Both of those things have existed for a long time. Neither of those things in and of themselves, I would suggest to you, justify the level of surveillance that's being proposed. There could be easily a level of surveillance that would be acceptable and that might address these issues, but the level of surveillance that I understand you want to go forward with, I don't think is going to meet those criteria. I think people in Stephensville, I believe that they would not consider it to be objectively reasonable for the government to have that level of surveillance for the reasons stated. I talked to the town's attorney briefly before the meeting. I'm not pretending to be a lawyer. He has some feelings about what level of surveillance would be acceptable in a public place, and he thinks that the acceptability is rather broad. I question whether or not Stephensville wants to be the poster child for testing that or not, given its proposed use of cameras. I said, as angry as we may be over random vandalism or drug dealing in a town, the use of 24/7 constant public surveillance by multiple cameras covering the entire park will not satisfy the subjective expectation of privacy that normal citizens would have because of the number and the spread. The citizens of Stephensville would agree that that expectation is objectively reasonable. I don't think we want to be surveilled at that level. And the reason given for the surveillance, the random violating, and the drug dealing is not enough to meet the constitutional standard of a compelling state interest. I empathize with the challenge that you folks have to deal with in dealing with this. I have been in your shoes. I understand that it's challenging. Concerned citizens and their visible and understandable anger about something can really motivate you to say, we should do something. But I think our response should be measured in this case. What did we do when we had an issue that was of significant public interest, and that was the gun ordinance? We had multiple public hearings on an issue of significant public interest. I believe that the use of security cameras at this level is definitely one that rises to the fact of significant public interest, and you need at least one, if not more, public hearings to hear the public on explaining your plan, explaining why you think it's reasonable and justified, and hearing your feedback. Having it at one meeting originally and then moving full steam ahead, I don't think is the right public process. So I hope that you'll take that into consideration. We had many, many hearings on guns and parks, and I have to say, during those hearings, one of the primary points that were made, there were Second Amendment points that were made here, is that word, and those series of words, shall not be infringed. People wanted to make it very clear to me, in particular, and the council in general, that those words meant exactly what they meant to the common person. That you just can't do it. Now, the courts have ruled there are reasons to do it and reasons not to do it, etc. That's what we have a law field for. In closing, I would just suggest that I did have a chance to talk to Chief Marble. He has some interesting views on the use of surveillance and its practicality as it's currently proposed. And we talked about the idea of, you know, what number of cameras would be necessary, Chief, for you to do your job. What do you need? And he said, I need one camera at the entrance of the park of the highest resolution possible. And from there, I can do everything I need to do. So I would suggest, as you go through this process, that you take into advisement of my strong things as a citizen, that we have public hearings to let the public know what we're planning to do, and that we keep those constitutional provisions in mind when we move forward, and about what it means to people in the town of Stevensville, what message we send. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Any further public comment? Okay, move on. There is no unfinished business on tonight's agenda, so we'll move on to new business. Discussion decision on Resolution 434, a resolution of the Town of Stevensville providing for an amendment of the budget for fiscal year 17-18. Public hearing was held at 6:30 prior to this meeting to gather public comment on the amendment. Again, in summary, the amendment allows for the expenditure of $6,119.15 to pay an invoice that had a multitude of work done on it and the acquisition of two fire engines. Ms. Holden.
I move we approve resolution number 434, a resolution of the Town Council of the Town of Stevensville, Montana, providing for the amendment of the budget for the fiscal year 2017-18.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt approve resolution 434, resolution of the Town of Stevensville Town Council, providing an amendment for the budget for fiscal year 2017-18. Any discussion from council? Ms. Holcomb.
We were told in our meeting before this one that the money was in capital improvement, correct?
In fund 4002, which is fire engine capital improvements.
But according to what you put out here, you blame the Stevensville Town Council that we did not set appropriations for the fire engine capital improvement fund. So do we have the money there, or do we not have the money there?
I don't think that are you reading the council communication?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the intent of that communication was to say that anyone is at fault. It's just a statement that we didn't appropriate for that amount of money, and we have to fix that.
So my question is it actually in this fire engine capital improvement fund? Because it sounds like in this, there isn't.
So it's when they say appropriations, they mean budget, they mean spending authority. The cash is in the account. So
okay.
This budget amendment allows for the appropriation of that cash.
Okay.
Okay. Ms. Barker.
Just for the record, too, I would like to read what our purchasing policy is. Anywhere between $1,000 to $501 to $25,000 per department. A minimum of 2 written quotes on vendor stationery is required. Documentation must accompany the claim submitted for approval. For existing vendors, the department supervisor will do an annual review of vendor pricing versus their competition. For purchases contained in the department's current fiscal budget year or the town's current capital improvement budget, department supervisors need only to get approval by the mayor's price prior to the purchasing. I've heard talk, again, it's talk about the fact that the mayor did not realize that we were going above and beyond this. I understand in the last meeting that we just had that we always go with the same vendor because that person knows. How do we know somebody new has not moved into the area and could do the same work? I understand when we purchased these that we were told that they were in good working condition, and now we have $6,000. And then for this vendor to wait until now to bring it forward, April, if I had somebody that I owed $6,000, I tell you what, I bet you they're going to be billing me pretty darn fast. I think this is way out of line to wait this long and to have a budget amendment on it.
To address the primary concern about the amount of money versus the purchasing policy and even the timeline, I can't speak for Snowmount Electric and the timeline as to how they invoice us, but it appears from the invoices that there is, and Chief Motley outlined that at the public hearing, there are a number of different projects on this invoice, on this invoice. It covers 2 different fire apparatus. I think if these invoices were split out per project, per engine, we'd see a significant decrease. The total would be the same, but we'd see a decrease in the overall limitations of what the purchasing policy requires. Nonetheless, I acknowledge, our purchasing policy doesn't really accommodate instances where a project, once we get into it, slips up and we go, whoa, this was way more than we thought it was going to be. You know, we select a vendor to do something thinking we'll come within budget or what have you, and then we get into that project and realize, well, we changed the route and we need to do something different, and the expenditure increases, and we don't have a provision in our purchasing policy to back the whole project up and go back out to bid for that entire project. It's not realistic after we've selected a vendor to do so. The engines were received in good working order. This is accessory work that's specific to the way our fire department operates and the requirements that we have of that equipment. And so if we operated exactly the same as the Missoula City Fire Department, then we'd probably not have these bills because the engines were ready for their fire department, not for us. And that's somewhat of an expense of purchasing used equipment. Ms. Barton.
If we knew that these type of things, we were going to have to do excess work on it, why didn't we look into it before we bought the engines? I mean, if I know that I'm going to buy something, I want to make sure that it's going to fit what I need before I purchase it. And it doesn't seem like that was the process. We were in such a hurry to get these 2 new engines, and a lot of work went into it.
I think if you added these bills to each of those engines were purchased at a cost of $20,000 a piece. You add the other $3,000 a piece on each of those engines, and maybe some other work, we may be into each of these engines $24,000, which, given the lifespan that we'll get out of these pieces of equipment, is an extremely competitive price. When, if we were to purchase these engines again, brand new, we'd be in the $400,000 range. And I mean, we have the cash to cover this expenditure. That's what the capital improvement fund for fire engines was designed for, was capital improvements to fire engines or replacement of fire engines. And that's the goal of that fund, and we've set up to exactly do that.
Okay. It just seems like we keep putting more and more out for them.
Chief Mom.
As fire chief, I'd like to address concerns we have on these new Type 1 engines, these custom-built air stabilizers that we were able to acquire for $20,000 a copy is unheard of. These apparatus have a 6-year lifespan to NFPA standard for $20,000. If you budget that out over the lifespan and the cost of that apparatus, this is the best bargain the town of Stevensville has seen in a long, long time. To put an additional $3,000 into these apparatus to make them service the department in the way that the department runs and operates, it depends on the dollar as to the investment and the value that the town will receive out of these apparatus. We have the money in the account that we've been saving for a number of years. Back when Chief Summers was the chief, he started this account for this exact reason, that we would be in a position that we could do these things when they become available. This type of a project to be able to acquire these apparatus from Missoula for that type of dollar amount is basically unheard of, and is one of those things that comes up that you need to be ready to move when the opportunity arises or it's gone. And fortunately, we've had leadership in the council and the department that was foresighted enough to start saving and put away for the rainy day or the opportunity that might come forward, and we were able to take advantage of that. And we're still there today, and again, if we look at our purchasing policy and you break it down over the scope of the work that was performed, the manner that it was performed and the request to be performed, I think you'll find that we're within our purchasing policy stipulations and rules. Doesn't change the fact that the contractor waited until all was said and done and then months after the fact to submit his bill. Why they did that, I don't know, but they did. It is, what it is. We do have the money to do it, and I would encourage you to move forward and take care of this.
Any further council comment or public comment? Mr. Minnick.
Perhaps it would make sense to remind the vendor that time in building would help avoid some of these questions, the legitimate questions that the council has. It does happen on occasion, but it's very unusual. But just a reminder, if the vendor is somebody we deal with on a regular basis, that for public purposes, it helps to get our bills a little bit closer to when the work's performed. If there's an issue, we can deal with it in the moment instead of so many months later.
Absolutely. And they're typically timely in billing us. This is kind of one of those situations where it got off on them, and they billed us, and we now have a process to follow through. They understand that process has to take place before payment can be made. Any further public comment or council comment? Okay, hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Smith, excuse me.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
No.
Okay, motion passes 2-1. Okay, we'll move on to new business item B, approval of the mayor's recommendation of Kent Myers and Dan Kerslake as urban supervisors to the Bitterroot Conservation District. You'll see a letter attached in your packet with the communication recommending Mr. Myers and Mr. Kerslake to the Conservation District Board as board supervisors. Those two individuals will represent all three of the municipalities in Rhode Valley County, or all three of them are contained in the district, Hamilton, Darby, and Stevensville. Mr. Smith.
I make a motion that we approve of the mayor's recommendation of Kent Myers and Dan Kurleski as the urban supervisors to the Bitterroot Conservation District.
Is there a second? Ms. Holcomb.
I'll second it.
Okay, so moved and seconded to approve the mayor's recommendation of Kent Myers and Dan Kerslake as urban supervisors to the Bitterroot Conservation District. Council discussion. Public comment. All right, hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Councilmember, excuse me, he's not there. Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Thank you. Next agenda item is item C, discussion decision to conduct a special audit regarding the town's fiscal year 18-19 budget. This agenda item was submitted by council members Michelson and Barker with no backup documentation. Ms. Barker, do you want to elaborate or?
I just feel that we need to find, we obviously came up with some money for, on the last council meeting where you had requested for a pay raise of $11,666 or whatever that amount was. We just feel that there's some things that maybe need to be looked at. It's just some questions need to be answered, and we felt that we need to have an audit done.
Ms. Holcomb?
I move that we approve a special audit regarding the town's fiscal year 18-19 budget.
For a second. Ms. Barker.
Second motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve a special audit regarding the town's fiscal year 18-19 budget. Discussion from council. Ms. Holcomb.
I'm in an agreement because when we first started this budget, we were $125,000 deficit, then we found money, then we were $125,000 deficit, then we found money, and then we found money again. But yet, we were fighting just to get decent computers for the council to conduct their business like we need to. I don't know what's going on, where the money's coming from, where it was, where. I just feel that we need to look into it.
Okay.
I guess I had one question.
I'm sorry. Sure.
I guess regarding that, were the employees given a raise this year?
They were not. We budgeted for a raise, but the council has not approved wages and salaries to date. So they're being paid the same wage they earned at the last fiscal year.
And how can we approve the budget, but we didn't approve those raises, though? I don't understand that. If we approved the budget, those raises were in that budget, correct?
You approved the spending authority for those wages. Montana Code delineates that you need to approve wages and salaries in a separate resolution. We brought that resolution forward, and it was not approved a couple of times, and we're waiting the two-meeting cycle before we bring that forward to you again. Because it failed. It appears, at least from where the finance officer and I sit on the budget and finance, that there's a confusion amongst the council between the budget and our cash and the authority that we have in our budget to spend that cash. So I'd suggest, I don't know who you intend to conduct this special audit or exactly what process you'll use to do that. That'd be helpful information if you're prepared to answer that tonight. Otherwise, maybe foregoing an audit and simply holding a budget update workshop where we come together on an evening and go through the budget and answer your questions and compare that to where we sit with our cash. Would be more productive. Ms. Barker.
I believe that Councilman Michelson had that documentation, but obviously he's not here tonight, so he cannot elaborate on what was to be discussed as well. I don't know if that's something that maybe we could discuss at a different meeting or if it was just we move forward and then
we
let you know who we're planning on having. I don't know.
Ms. Holcomb?
I think it's best that we table this. I know we already have a motion which we need to fulfill. But maybe the right thing to do until we have all four of us here is to table it for another meeting.
Okay. The motion right now on the floor is to approve a special audit regarding the town's fiscal year 18-19 budget. Is there any public comment on that motion? Mr. Minmack.
I think the procedure you're looking for is that the person who made the motion can withdraw the motion. And you can make a motion to go ahead and table it if you want. I think it's a pretty easy procedure to do, to be administratively correct.
Ms. Holcomb.
Then I will withdraw my motion.
Okay.
That's me in the middle of public comment.
We'll do public comment, yeah. We'll let them figure out their process and which direction they're in so that the public has an opportunity to know what they're commenting on. So, Ms. Holcomb, you wish to withdraw your motion?
Yes.
Okay. And Ms. Barker, you concur?
Yeah.
All right. Motion's withdrawn. Give me a motion. Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we table the discussion decision of a special audit regarding the town's fiscal year 18-19 budget. And so our meeting, when is the next meeting?
October 22nd.
Till October 22nd.
Okay, it's been moved to table discussion decision to conduct a special audit on the 18-19 budget to October 22nd. Is there a second? Ms. Barker.
Second.
Okay, so moved and seconded to table this to October 22nd's meeting. Council discussion.
Shouldn't we have amended that first, or voted on that last amendment? Because we have a motion on the table.
It wasn't amended. She withdrew it
okay,
entirely,
sorry.
So it's off the table. So we're okay to move forward. Thanks for asking. Any further council discussion on tabling this to the next meeting, October 22nd? Any public comment? Ms. Motley.
Vicki Motley, 318 Ninth Street. My request would be of the council is to, answer those questions. How, who is going to conduct it? If you go through with a special audit, how will it be done and the cost? Because those are not budgeted items, so then I would want to know where that money would be coming from.
Mr. Sharkey.
And I would add, Michael Sharkey, 203 St. Mary's Drive. And I'd like to add to Ms. Motley's request that before you vote on a motion to go ahead with this, that you come up with some specificity other than we just have some things that we don't think are right. I'd like to hear specifically the things are that you're going to be looking at.
Any further public comment? Mr. Motley.
I think that it seemed to me that this is a subject that the council could sit down and with the treasurer pose their questions and the answers to those questions before hiring somebody to do a special audit and costing the town more money when the employee treasurer should be able to give you the answers and reasoning behind her budget. I don't see why we need to go through that at expense.
Thank you. Gene?
Gene McMack. I guess we're going to table a motion. I would encourage people who submitted the motion, I believe it's Councilmember Michelson and Holcomb.
Barker,
excuse me. To consider the wording of their request, because a budget is just a document that's produced full of numbers at the beginning of a year. And that budget is passed. And those numbers get updated through the books. But a special audit of the budget itself is nonsensical to me. There's nothing to audit in a group of numbers that have been approved by the council. It seems to me what you're suggesting, that you want to see how the money's been spent or allocated from the day the budget was started, July 1, I believe, up to this date, a period of a few months, quite frankly. And I believe that the duty of the treasurer is to submit in a timely manner those books to to the council for review. You have, they're open. Anybody can look at them at any time. Can ask for a whole copy of what's been spent, how it got spent, and everything else. And where the money is. Including all the varying accounts, the savings accounts, all these accounts are publicly available. And available to the council at request by the treasurer. And any of the transfers you approve every single night, every single time you meet. So the idea of a special audit also infers that you're looking for some sort of illegal behavior. The reason that you do a special audit usually is because you're looking for something that you believe may have been happened that's illegal. And if you're suggesting that, well then, that needs to be presented so that the public knows what your concerns are, because those kinds of concerns are very, very important to the public, and certainly an important item that the council and everybody would be concerned about. So without more information, I would just encourage you, as you go forward with this at the next meeting, that you include substantial information and what you mean. And if you mean to have a special audit of the budget, I don't think that's what your intention is, and I encourage you to consider what it is you're looking for and be very specific about that so that the public can know, and also that if you approve something going forward, then you know what you're approving and you know what your expectation is, and someone can say this is going to cost this much. I would suggest financially, and I know it's a valid concern of the council at all times, to consider the budget and make sure things are being spent appropriately. A special audit is going to be very, very expensive. Oftentimes it exceeds the cost of an audit that's done generally, and those are many thousands of dollars. So just give that some thought. Is there a way to resolve this? Answer valid questions that the council may have about spending authority and where the money comes from and where it goes, because those are publicly available documents at any time and at no charge. And I appreciate that the council members are looking hard at the budget and have questions. Those need to be sincerely and accurately answered by the folks that you hire to do that work. And I think you could probably get these answers much easier and at less cost than the idea of a special audit, especially since a special audit does infer that there's been some illegality. And if that's what you're inferring, it can certainly be justifiable to look for it. Thank you very much.
Any further public comment? Motion is to table this item to the October 22nd meeting. Okay. Any further council comment? Call for the vote. Councilmember Barker.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
And Councilmember Smith.
Aye.
Okay. The motion passes. We'll revisit this on October 22nd. That concludes the business portion of our agenda. The brief executive report for you. Last week, as you're aware, Audrey and I attended the annual Montana League of Cities and Towns Conference in Butte. The information provided at the conference was informative and even, in some cases, inspiring, and certainly helpful for the clerk and myself. While there, I was able to coordinate with MLCT, MMIA, and the local government center to set up a time for a communications workshop that we had discussed. The date for that has been set most conveniently for them for October 30th. That's a Tuesday. The exact schedule is yet to be determined. However, I know that the facilitators would like to hold conferences with myself and the staff and the council members two at a time during the afternoon and the evening, leading up to the main 7 o'clock meeting. So we'll schedule the main workshop at 7, and then throughout the afternoon, they'd like to meet with two council members at a time to avoid a quorum, and with the mayor and the staff. So we've done it. We've preliminarily scheduled some of it so that you folks, since you're working, you can come in the evening before the 7 o'clock meeting, visit with these folks, and then those of us that are around during the daytime, we can convene with them during that time. So it should work out scheduling-wise. But when we have firm times, we'll let everybody know. That information, though, what the scheduling or whatever else they need, it was some discussion from them that they may do a survey. It's going to come either from my office or the facilitators themselves. At any rate, I'm eager to resolve the division that exists in the organization and start working towards effective governance for our citizens. April's been soliciting estimates for the fencing project at the airport. However, we've not received any responses. We'll continue to reach out to them in order to complete the project in a timely way. Coinciding with the project for the fence is an effort to address the culvert and drainage of the driveway to the SRA building, and that relates exclusively to the driveway damage claim from the neighbors to the west. We'll coordinate the two projects to minimize disruptions, so those will happen somewhat in tandem. Estimate was received to replace the pool heater that failed over the summer. The complete cost with installation included was over $13,000, and so compared to the original $5,000 budget that I had proposed, we're going to go back to the drawing board and see what we can drum up.
I got another bid for $15,000.
Okay, so it's just going up on us. Sad news. Project managers from Municode have been in contact with us for our new website and agenda management system. We'll be holding conference calls with the teams at Municode and expect to have both systems in place by Christmas. The agenda and meetings management system will take the place of distributing packets through Dropbox, and that will aid the clerk in assembling the packet as well. So that implementation will be much, much quicker than the implementation of the website, and it'll actually allow for a more seamless process for the council and citizens and staff to submit agenda items as well, so it'll be more electronic. Audrey's going to email the council the revised version of the council rules and the forms that you approved at the last meeting when we did those revisions for the deadline of submittal of agenda items. We'll also make those items available on our website this week as we do updates. Friday is a big day in Stevensville with the kickoff of Scarecrow Festival, First Friday, and Homecoming. We're asking citizens to exercise caution and patience as they navigate town Friday, as we expect severe traffic congestion throughout the afternoon and into the evening. Harassment training continues to progress. I think the Public Works Department completed theirs.
Just one.
Jeff still needs to get through his, but for the most part, we're whittling away at employees. And completing that. The only other item I need to bring up is per the clerk, she's requested starting at the next meeting that we start a sign-in sheet at the door for folks coming in. If you're going to speak, she'd like a sign-in sheet. It's becoming hard for her to transcribe the minutes and get all of that put together, and not knowing voices and faces and names and the community as well as she'd like to, that sign-in sheet will help. It'll also provide a record of who was at the meeting. So expect that. Those of you in the audience, expect to see a sign-in sheet at the next meeting on the 22nd. You've got 3 weeks to forget I said anything, and then we'll remind you then. That's all I have for my executive report. Town Council comments. Mr. Smith.
Continuation of the project that I am liaison with Kathy Cook and the Civic Club and the other young lady. We did receive, or are in the process of receiving, another bid from another contractor regarding the surveillance system. We are looking at the issues regarding the privacy, and as it stands, what I've seen is really once you walk out your door, you have no expectation of privacy. You are filmed via the banks, the post office, and everybody as you travel around town. There's cameras on the exterior of markets everywhere. Expectation of privacy does fall within guidelines of the law, being that I am not an attorney, I'm not going to get into that. So there is a, shall we say, a gray area that may have to be addressed. Again, I am just the liaison, so I am forwarding all documentation and all information to the group that is participating in this, and it will come back before council again as time progresses. We are looking at trying to figure out how we can make, because again, there are those issues that we don't want it to face the pool, because then we become the lifeguard and we get into other issues such as that. So there are angles and that you won't be able to stitch together or anything like that. So we are taking all of these into consideration for this. And again, I'll just say that I'm the liaison, doing the best we can to accommodate what our citizenry has asked us to do as a council member.
Further council comments? Board reports. Any board reports?
No board meetings.
All right. I guess it has only been a week. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Ms. Holcomb?
I move we adjourn.
Is there a second? Ms. Barker?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting's adjourned.